Shabbos Daf Nun Aleph. The Mishnah says, if you didn't insulate a pot before Shabbos, then you would not be able to insulate it on Shabbos. But if you covered it in insulation before Shabbos, you insulated it before Shabbos, and then the insulation fell off and it got uncovered, then you would be allowed to cover it again and re-insulate it. The Mishnah also says that you can take a cold water bottle and put it under a cushion or a bolster, teaching that you can insulate things to keep them cold. The Gemara starts off with the statement of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel, who says that you can insulate cold food to keep it cold. However, Rabbi Yosef says, why do we need to know that? Why do we need Shmuel to tell us that? We already know that from the Mishnah. So my answer is, if we only had the Mishnah, you might have thought that you can only insulate cold food, which isn't normally insulated to keep it warm. Like cold water, which is always going to be insulated for cold, but you're not going to insulate cold water to keep it warm. However, cooked food, which you're normally going to insulate to keep it warm, I might have thought that you can't insulate that to keep it cool. So Shmuel is teaching us that you can even insulate stuff that you might sometimes insulate to keep it warm. You could insulate that to keep it cold. Rav Huna teaches that Rebbe said that you can't insulate cold food. However, we have a braisa that says Rebbe allows you to insulate cold food. So how does that make sense? Like, my answer is that Rebbe used to forbid insulating cold food until he heard the ruling of Rebbe Shmuel Rebbe Yossi. Because one time Rebbe said that you can't insulate cold food. However, Rebbe Shmuel Rebbe Yossi came and said, well, my father Rebbe Yossi allowed you to insulate cold food. And Rebbe said, oh, so if that's true, then that's the halacha that you can insulate cold food. And Rav Papa says, look how much these Tanai and these Rabbanim cherish each other, because if Rabbi Yossi were alive, he would have been subordinate to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, because of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's greater position as the Nasi, which is evident because his son, Rabbi Shmuel, who was his equal, was also subordinate to Rabbi Yehuda. However, nonetheless, Rabbi still followed the ruling of Rabbi Yossi because he cherished him so much. Rav Nachman told Daru, his servant, to insulate cold food on Shabbos, and that during the week he should bring water that was heated by an Armenian cook, because he was saying that water that's cooked by a non-Jew, water that's boiled by a non-Jew, does not fall into the category of bishul akum, food that was cooked by a non-Jew, which would be prohibited to you. However, Rabbi Ami objected to this. Why did he object to it? It seems weird. That he objected to it, because Shmuel says you can insulate cold food, so that has a basis. And Rav says that whatever is normally eaten raw does not fall into the category of bishul akum, like water. So Rav Nachman has a basis for both of these rulings. So what was Rav Ami upset about? The reason he felt that that Rav Nachman shouldn't do that is because he felt that an important person like Rav Nachman shouldn't follow these lenient rulings. There's a price that says that you can't insulate food after Shabbos. You can't insulate food on Shabbos if you didn't insulate it before Shabbos. However, you can add more insulation. If you already insulate something before Shabbos, then you can add more insulation to it. So how do you do that? Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says you could take off the sheets that you're using to insulate with and add coats, and you can take off the coats that you're using to insulate and add sheets. So he's teaching that you can even switch to different types of insulation. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel also added that there are banon hold that you can't insulate a food on Shabbos if it's in the same spot that it was cooked in. But if you transferred from one pot into a new pot, then you could insulate it on Shabbos, even if you didn't insulate it before Shabbos. And the Gemara says the reasoning for that is because if you're purposely cooling down your food by transferring it into a new pot, then you're not going to come to reheat it, because the whole fear of insulating your food is that you're going to come to reheat it up. But if you're specifically transferring it to a new pot in which you're going to cool it off, then we're not worried that you might come to reheat it. There's a price that says if you insulated a pot on its sides and on top with insulation that's not muksa, or you insulated the sides of a pot with muksa insulation, but the top, you cover the top of it with insulation that's not muksa, you could take off the cover and kind of let the insulation fall off, and then you could take the pot out and put it back. However, if you insulated the sides of the pot and you covered the top of the pot with muksa insulation, or you just covered the top with muksa insulation, if part of the cover is exposed, then you could take off the cover and let the insulation fall off, and you could take the pot out and put it back. However, if none of the top is exposed, then you are not allowed to touch the pot because it's going to be muksa. Rabbi Yehuda says that fine flax is just like manure in that it's going to add heat, and therefore you can't use it to insulate. He also says you could put a kettle on top of a kettle or a pot on top of a pot, and you can seal the top of a vessel with dough to preserve the heat. And basically all these teachings are teaching that you could do something, you can kind of insulate something and preserve it, not to heat it up, but you can do it just to keep something hot and keep it warm. He also says that you can't insulate cold food. However, Rebbe says you would be allowed to insulate cold food. And finally, he says you can't crush snow or hail for its water. However, you can put the snow or the hail into a bowl or a cup to cool down a liquid. Hadron alach, b'meh tomnin shkayach, tomnin shkayach. I'm finishing the fourth parak, and we're about to start the fifth parak, b'meh behema. So the Mishnah asks, what is considered a bird that an animal cannot go out into a public domain with on Shabbos, and what is not? Because an animal can't go out with a burden, you can't make your animal do work. So what kind of, specifically in the case of a restraint, what kind of restraint is going to be considered a burden that an animal would not be allowed to go out with on Shabbos, and what can it go out with on Shabbos? So the Mishnah answers that a camel can go out with a halter. These are all different types of restraints. A female dromedary, which is a one-humped camel, could go out with a shatom. A luvdakim could go out with a prumbia. A horse could go out with a collar. And all animals that normally go out with a collar can go out with the collar and be pulled by that collar, and you could sprinkle the Parah Aduma ashes or immerse the collar in a mikvah to make it not tameh, even while the collar is still on the animal's neck. So the Gemara asks, what does the Mishnah mean by a female dromedary with a shatom on? Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says we're talking about a white female dromedary with a nose ring as its restraint. And so the Mishnah also says the Luv Dikim can go out with a prumbia. So what does that mean? Rav Huna says it's a donkey from the city of Luv with an iron bit. Again, a different type of restraint. So Levi, a story that happened that Levi once sent money to the city of Bechozai because he wanted them to buy him a Luvian donkey, which were very good quality donkeys. However, the problem was they're very hard to get to. It's a far distance and they're very expensive and the people didn't really want to do it. So they sent him back his money and they said, just buy a donkey where you live and feed it with barley, and that's going to be just as good as a Luvian donkey. So Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that they once asked Rebbe, can a camel go out with a nose ring and can a female dromedary go out with a halter? Meaning you're switching the restraints of different animals. Is that allowed to go out? So are you allowed to go out with that if you switch the restraints of the animals? So Rebbe answered, so a dromedary obviously can't go out with the halter because that's not going to restrain the animal, and therefore it's just going to be an unnecessary burden. The question is, by the camel, when you have this extra restraint, is that considered a burden or not? So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says that my father said that there are four animals that can go out with a halter: a horse, a mule, a camel, and a donkey. So isn't this teaching that a camel cannot go out with a nose ring? Because it says it can only go out with a halter. However, the Gemara answers, no, it could even be teaching that a female dromedary is not allowed to go out with a halter, and which we already know, it's not necessarily teaching that a camel cannot go out with a nose ring. We bring in a brisa on the side that says that a Luvian donkey and camels can go out with a halter. However, going back to the topic of discussion, whether an excessive restraint is considered a restraint or not, and would therefore be a burden, is actually a machlokas tanaim, because you have a brace that says that a beast cannot go out with a rope collar. Chananya says that it could go out with any type of restraint. So now the Gemara starts to analyze this. So obviously we can't be talking about a large animal like a bear, because a rope collar would not be enough to even hold it. So everyone would agree that that is not a, that would be a burden. It's just extra. And we're not talking about a small animal like a marten or a weasel, because the rope collar would be perfect for that animal, and therefore there's no reason for anyone to prohibit it. So rather, the machlokas between Chananya and the Tanakama is that the Tana is about a cat, that the Tanakama holds that an ordinary cord is enough for a cat, so therefore it's an excessive restraint and therefore it's going to be a burden. However, Chananya holds that an excessive restraint is not considered a burden, and therefore it would be fine to use that. And Rav Huna Bar Chia says in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is like Chananya, that the excessive restraint is not considered a burden. There's a story where Levi bereid Rav Huna Bar Chia and Rabba Bar Rav Huna were traveling, and Levi bereid Rav Huna Bar Chia's donkey passed Rabba Bar Rav Huna's donkey, and Rabba got upset because he was Levi's teacher, and it seemed like a slight of, like it was disrespectful for his donkey to pass him, and Levi wanted to appease Rabba, so Levi asked him, can you use a bit, which is an excessive restraint, for an aggressive donkey like this one? And he was basically showing that his donkey, he didn't want his donkey to go ahead, it's just an aggressive donkey which just made its own decision and went ahead of Rabba's donkey. So that calmed Rabba down. And to answer the question, Rabba said that your father, Rav Huna Bar Chia, said in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is like Chananya, that an excessive restraint is not considered a burden and therefore would be fine. Shkayach.